Welcome to Manager Tools. The Manager Tools Performance Review System, Part 3. Here we go. This cast answers these questions. What's the best way to set up a performance review system? How often should I rate my directs? Who should rate the performance of directs and how? If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
The two fundamental ways you can improve the quality of your results and your retention is to manage better and to hire better. If you want to hire better, one way to do that is to use the Manager Tools interview creation tool available to all licensees. Come to the website, manager-tools.com/interview creation tool.
We've been talking about the Manager Tools Performance Review System. It's one of our first organizationally focused cast, something new. We're in a part three, so we could try to summarize everything we've talked about so far, but that would probably be a cast in and of itself. But folks, you know, first point was that all ratings are provided on a one-page form. Point two, one-page forms need not include quantitative evaluations. They can, but need not include it. Next point, forms may be completed in legible handwriting. They don't have to be typed. And the last point we covered on our last cast was that reviews occur annually, at a minimum. But when we say annually, not like on December 31st or January 1st every year, but at the start date of your job or your role or whatever you're doing. And the start date can change over time based upon changes in position. So our last point was really starting to talk about when people get reviews, and at least once a year, perhaps at different dates at a minimum. And so what we have a couple other events that would cause you to get a review as well. If any of those surprise you, and for many of you, there will be some surprising things in there, go listen to the previous cast on the topic. For those of you who have been with us up to date, let's continue on with when people get reviews. So first, we said annually at a minimum. What are some of the other times or events in one's career where one would should expect a review in the Manager Tools Performance Review System?
Yeah, so you start off with the fundamental premise that everybody gets a review if their job and their role hasn't changed in the last 12 months. So if I got a review from Mike in March, Mike stayed my boss and I stayed working for him and my role did not change. I didn't get promoted. I didn't move into a different role. Then in the March of the following year, I would get a review. If in those 12 months, Mike moved roles, in other words, I was still in my same role, but Mike changed and I got a new boss, I would get a review from Mike when he left. We call that reviews occur at a change of rater event.
Now, be clear, I just want to make sure, because I've seen this done in different ways. Be clear, you're saying is that I leave, you get a new boss, I'm going to write you a review and deliver you a performance review. I don't think you're saying, oh, I'm going to write some notes about Mark's performance and give it to your new boss, who will then incorporate it into her review when she does it, say, in February.
Yeah, that the system wouldn't cover that. The system, you know, obviously we would encourage that. If you and I were, you know, if you were leaving a job and I was taking over your job, the system, if it didn't require you to write a review on somebody, ideally, you know, any intelligent manager or executive would say, you know, please write some notes for the incoming. But that's not what we're saying. We're saying the system requires a review to be written formally and input into the system. As long as you've been in the role 90 days, 90 days is long enough since the previous review to trigger a review. When your boss changes, the outgoing boss is obligated to write a review of all of his or her directs. It's called a change rater review, and it obligates the rater's manager to review it and suggest changes or approve it. Think about this. Consider what happens in most current systems when a person's manager changes 10 months into their role, okay? Normally, the manager who has 10 months of data provides no input to the system, and the manager with 2 months of insight, so we're saying, let's say, you've been my boss from January to October. You leave. You don't have to write me a review. And in fact, there's a part of you that's thrilled a little bit that, oh, I don't have to write reviews this year on these guys. And maybe you have a big team.
Yeah, it's a new job bonus. That's pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. And then somebody else comes in, and the manager with 2 months of insight has to write a review on me. Again, to your point, we'd love to assume that the old manager compiles a transition document. That's part of our recommendations. But again, those are recommendations for managers, not for organizations. But that's really unlikely. It just doesn't happen. And to be clear, in the Manager Tools Performance Review System, which is an organizational guidance document, we don't formally mandate that. We would encourage it and recommend it, but we're not going to track it because there's already enough to track with. There are going to be more reviews written of more people. And yes, folks, we're aware that we're asking you to do more. We're careful about creating more work. We know you're busy getting results and retaining people. But the fact is, organizations' succession planning in many cases is quite broken because the review system is quite broken and overinflated and so on and so on and so on. Look, imagine in the example I just gave, we make it even worse because I worked for Mike. Mike leaves in October. I started working for him in January. Because between January and October, I worked on a project for several months. And neither my previous boss, Mike, nor the project manager are asked to provide input. Because let's say I work on the project from February to September, and then the project ends, and now I'm back full-time working for Mike. A month later, Mike leaves. My new boss has no idea, probably, that I worked on the project, or only has a vague sense of it, or may, in fact, have been told about it, but it doesn't rise to the level of, oh, I need to go reach out to that project manager. And if he did, the project manager would say, who are you? Oh, I'm Mark's new boss. Hey, would you write me some notes? Sure, I'll do something. And he gets a paragraph.
Criminal.
Yeah, it's our experience that this is more common than managers doing what the system seems to need, but that no one is inspecting, or of course, if you're not inspecting it, then it's not being expected either. Here's simple. Bottom line, if you're a manager and you change jobs, you owe everybody who works for you a change of rate of review, assuming it has been 90 days or longer since the last review you wrote. That way, a carousel of bosses for somebody, and that happens too, doesn't create a long period of unrated and therefore undeveloped, untracked, unimproved time in a role. If I go through three bosses in a year, and let's say I don't have a boss in December, probably my senior rater, my boss's boss, my manager's manager is the one who's going to be stuck with writing the review. And I work for three different people. The chances I'm going to get a good review are zero. If I don't get a good review, what are the chances that the system is going to take good care of me? None.
That's right. Now go back to 90 days, because you suggested that when your boss leaves, that person, she needs to have had at least 90 days in that position to write the review. It's probably obvious to folks why that might be, but can you talk about that just for a second?
Yeah. You need at least 90 days to provide enough time in a role to be competent, to achieve some competency, some reasonable knowledge of a person to provide a review. And we're going to talk more about that in a section where we talk about non-rated time. But basically, if I get a review on March 1st, then 90 days, you know, all of March, all of April, all of May. And if you're my boss and you rate me on March 1 and on May 15th, you change roles, I don't get a review for those 75 days, but the system knows that you are my boss for 75 days. And when my new boss comes in, that rating period will be cut, that not non, it's called non-rated time, will be covered. Otherwise, if we don't set a minimum of 90 days, that means if you write review on me and then a week later you change, you have to write another review of time in position of only a week, which doesn't make any sense at all. So 90 days is the minimum. Now, is it possible that I have three bosses in a year and they all are my boss for 80 days or 3 out of 4, say, are my boss for 80 days. Yes, that's possible. It does. It can happen, but it's exceedingly rare. And that time would show up as non-rated time.
Okay, so let's talk about another event that often occurs where I'm working for Mark, and it's been 90 days in my current role, and I get moved into a new role, and I'm still working for Mark, right?
Yes.
Right? I'm still working for you, but I'm in a new role. I used to be a software developer, and now I am a team lead, right? Which requires different skills, right? So a new role. I get a review.
Yeah. Reviews occur at a change of role event. If you've been in a role with the same boss for more than 90 days and you get promoted or you take a lateral move or change roles in some other way, even if your boss stays the same, a review is triggered. This is a way to capture rated time in your previous role. And what we're trying to do is capture insight into the performance of people, of any person in any role. So if you change roles, we want to capture the end of the previous role. And to be clear, guys, these trigger events, these events, change of rater, change of role, annual, are designed to increase the frequency of reviews.
Yeah, this is where we're going to lose some managers.
Yeah.
Up until this point, everybody's like, yeah, this is great. One page review. Yeah, I got it.
Yeah. I had this discussion with somebody, I want to say at Delta a few weeks ago, and they wigged out. They said, you can't do that. It's too. I said, okay, I'm going to give you a comparison. I said, people come to us all the time and say, I can't do one-on-ones. You can't ask me to do one-on-ones. I don't have time. I said, yeah, the reason you don't have time is you're not doing one-on-ones. We guarantee if you do one-on-ones our way, you'll get back more time in your calendar than you spend in one-on-ones. It's that much of an efficiency gain for you. So they are defending their schedule against a new thing. Totally reasonable. I get it. Fine. But the new thing actually solves the problem that their schedule is presenting. Same thing here. It is impossible for a lot of people, not most, but for a lot of people, to have a concept that we're going to ask you to do more reviews, but you're going to spend less time on them. The reason why is, A, it's one page. B, it can be handwritten. C, you will be doing them throughout the year and you will become good at reviews. So all of those things work in our favor. We want people getting better at reviews. And believe me, when you're a vice president, you want good reviews to look at. So you're not having to call everybody. I mean, I know a lot of vice presidents say, no, you got to go talk to everybody. You got, you know, on a regular basis and keep track of people because there's no way you're going to get good stuff in their reviews. So we want more reviews. And we also want to reduce the serious amount of unrated, undeveloped, unattentioned time that occurs if you only have an end of calendar year review system. And again, when you spread the reviews out throughout the year, you reduce the headache. The headache that people feel about reviews are in part because you have to do 4 or 8 or 10. And again, it's only one page. In our system, you get more data about performance and the manager does about the same amount of work spread out over the course of the year. So it's going to feel much less of an impact. It's going to feel like much less of an impact than the present system that most people have.
Right. And I'd say the reviews are also of higher quality because many roles have different characteristics. And wouldn't we want to know how somebody did? Let's just take an example. One would be a programmer, right? Attention to detail, dotting the I's, crossing the T's, probably interpersonal stuff. I wouldn't say it's not important, but not as important as compared to, for example, somebody in a project or program management role. So somebody's for half the year, they're in a programming position. In another one, they're in a project management position requiring different skills. Why would we want to take their performance, which could be vastly different, right, in those two roles and munge them up together? That doesn't make sense. Wouldn't we want to know through our performance review system that Mike is really good in high detailed, you know, kind of stuff. But hey, put him in a position that requires lots of communication with lots of different people. He doesn't do as well. That's important to know in succession planning.
Yeah. And of course, if you did good and then bad in the course of a year, you're going to get a bad review. Or you're going to get the mishmash in between is not going to look good. You won't have gotten a review that says Mike shined. So, yeah. And if you spread the events that generate reviews throughout the year, it helps us as managers always be thinking about performance reviews and development. And we get better at them because it's no longer the horseman's Christmas rule.
Good. I think out of all the events that would cause somebody to write a review, this is the one we'll probably get the most pushback on. Just because as soon as we cover this one, people go like, oh my God, we are absolutely writing more reviews.
Yeah. I'm going to quote Dumbledore here from Harry Potter, and I'm going to misquote him, but the gist is correct. There will come a time we have to choose between what is right and what is easy. Right? And people want reviews to be easy because they hate them, because they're poorly administered, because they know at some level they're not used, because they're over-quantified, because they're over-inflated, and so on. And the only way you could make people happy with reviews is to get rid of them. Or say, oh, just send your boss an email every once in a while with a couple of notes on people, and the system will capture that and put it all together. Now, if you're going to talk about someone's future, if you're going to talk about the arc of someone's career, if you're going to talk about where they're going to go next, if you want the right and the privilege of managing another person, controlling their addiction to food, clothing, and shelter, you had better be willing to sit down and be serious about someone's performance. And that's one of the things that, Mike, I'm amazed that when I think back to my maturity now versus when I was 25, that I had to write reviews when I was 25. And I didn't get a lot of guidance from my boss. I didn't. It doesn't bode well. So our system needs to be better, and we need to be better.
Okay, so let's stay on that. I think it's a good segue into our next topic about getting guidance from your boss. And in our system, there's a requirement that the raters rater. So if Mark works for me and I work for Maggie, when I write a review, Maggie has to review it, regardless of tenure, has to review all my evaluations.
Yeah, basically from here on out, we're talking about the administration of the system, that basically there are three events that will trigger a review: change of rater, change of role, or annual. And administration of performance reviews is basically in the purview of HR, but it is largely actioned by line managers. Line managers create the quality of data in the system. When HR creates great relationships with their supported line managers, the system works well. When HR spends time being closer to senior execs or powerful people, then the system becomes much more of an enforcement mechanism that, oh, you know, where are your reviews? I need your reviews. Or, you know, the vice president needs your reviews. Why are you late? Right? You're essentially compelling people to do things. Now, to be clear, the administration of the performance review system and the data in it falls into the succession planning and talent development systems. The system of performance reviews exists primarily to create accurate performance data to support talent development and succession planning decisions, because even though we say it cynically, people are our most important asset, it's only because it's true. In all humor, there is truth. Organizational performance review systems also support compensation and benefit systems, but generally, performance reviews do not reside in that system's architecture, the compensation and benefits and so on. This system of reviews gives data to that in the form of compensation discussions between executives and the finance people, but performance reviews are not part of the compensation and benefits schema of the organizations. Typically, really effective organizations mine the performance review system for data to inform how executives and senior managers make decisions about compensation. But compensation systems don't drive performance reviews, just the opposite. The primary provider of input to the performance review is, of course, the direct manager of the person being rated. The manager's rater, again, in typical corporate parlance, the skip-level manager of the person being rated, is generally called the reviewer. Sometimes called the senior rater, sometimes called skip-level rater or skip-level reviewer. Okay, the reviewer does just what her role says, reviews, okay, and ensures that the document, the rating, the evaluation, generally conforms to the system and any performance criteria that might apply within a sub-organization. There'll be an organization-wide corporate performance review system, and then maybe some VP or some senior manager or something will say, here's how I want to do this. Here's some things I'm looking for. I really want to highlight these things. Now, if you've never had a senior person tell you that, that just tells you that you're not being exposed to how things are done at really, really effective organizations about reviews. It's possible a reviewer, in having to approve a review, could ask a rater to change a statement which was technically, for some reason, outside the purview of the rater. For instance, if a senior manager wrote of one of her managers, "This manager is the finest manager of all 100 managers in our division." Well, if you're a senior manager of only 5 to 7 other managers, you wouldn't have standing to say that in a review. And the reviewer would correct it before signing or approving the review.
That's right. Unless you went to the VP who was responsible for all 100 managers. And that VP said, this person is the best manager of the all 100 managers in our division.
And then you'd have to put that the VP said that, right?
That's right.
It would be like an accomplishment bullet on a resume. And you know what's funny about that? I don't know why more systems haven't figured out that performance is always individual, okay? Yes, teams can make a difference. Your surroundings can make a difference, no question. Your colleagues can make a difference. But ultimately, performance is individualized. That's how the system works in most cases. There are some that try to do teams. I read an article recently about why organizations hire teams and not people. That was crazy. But your performance is individual. Think about that on your review, on your resume. Your resume shows your individual performance. Sometimes it's as part of a team, no question about it. Okay. Why then do we not have reviews which are written in such a way that look similar to the accomplishment bullets on resumes? It's amazing. In fact, the reason why is managers aren't familiar with the specific accomplishments and write 100 words of meringue-like prose in order to fill up a box full of superlative adjectives and adverbs, when in fact saying number one in the department, number two in quality, longest string of number one weeks in my history as a manager in this area, and so on. And of course, if you don't know how to write a review, or if that worries you that you like to put out meringue and you didn't realize that it was meringue, we encourage you to go back and listen, as we said before, to our podcasts about how to write, how to prepare, how to write, and how to deliver a review. And you'll learn the two primary ways that most well-trained people know how to write reviews, the pros of reviews. One is called SEER, and one is called SUMMEX. And if you've never heard those two phrases that relates to review, you are batting in the minor leagues. You do not know what the standards are for high quality in reviews. And to be clear, I'm not trying to put you down. It's not your fault. The organization should have taught you this. Nobody taught me. The reason this podcast is free is so that anybody can learn this stuff, so you don't have to go through what Mike and I went through.
SEER and SUMMEX, that sounds familiar. Do you think there's a podcast out there somewhere on the internet, on the collection of pipes called the internet? Do you think there's a podcast out there on SEER and SUMMEX?
Yeah, January 2006.
There might be. Okay. Thanks, everyone. That's it for this week. We'll finish this up next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.